We're going to begin again from Ois right now.
Wow!
We're going to begin again from Ois Samach Vav. We're mamish in middle of an intricate back and forth. So let's just recap where we stand. The king of Khuzar is challenging or questioning that, well, let's start a little before that. The Chover, the Jewish sage, has been pointing out a few different, very interesting and insightful aspects of the Torah's tradition of world history. And showing how the Torah gives very interesting accounts of how the different nations began, etc., that's very hard to refute. Now the Khuzari is questioning what's been questioned since then till today. The Torah's account for the age of the world. How old the world is. He began by saying, well, there are other traditions that the world is more than 10,000 years old. In India and stuff like that. And his answer to that was, well, those are primitive cults that don't really need to be reckoned with. But then he said, that's fine as far as primitive cults go, but what are you going to do when you're talking about the whole scientific community? The philosophers. That was the cutting edge of science in that time. And philosophical belief at the time was that the world actually, not only is it very old, but it actually has no beginning. It existed since an infinite amount of years ago. Always was. Again, something that's very hard to comprehend what that's supposed to mean. But apparently Aristotle did comprehend. So the sage answered, well, they're not based on tradition. They only came to this conclusion because they had no tradition. Which seems like a simplistic answer, and here's where we're getting to the next stage of it. And the cover answer, had they had the tradition, Aristotle would have worked out the philosophical premises for the tradition. Now the king of Khuzar says, but one minute. Aristotle reached his conclusions based on true philosophical study and substantiation. Meaning, he substantiated it. He proved it philosophically. So what are you telling me? If he had the tradition, he would have proven otherwise. But if it's been proven, it's been proven. How could you say he would have proven otherwise? That's where we stand now. So this Jewish sage answers, "Umei'ayin lanu moifes b'she'ela zois," and this is very fundamental. He says, "Mister, what do you mean he proved it? How do you prove that? Did they discover secret video cameras from an infinite amount of years ago showing that the world existed?" Well, you couldn't even show that on a video camera. Fail, if you claim it was created a billion years ago, you could discover a camera that shows it being created a billion years ago with a date on it. But how can you ever prove that it was created infinite years ago, an infinite amount of years ago? So he says, no. Chalila lokel shetovayatero b'mashiyit cheraya emoifetz. He lays down a fundamental principle which you have to understand in light of our day's issues. The Torah will never conflict with something that can be proven black and white. Meaning, it'll never conflict with something that you can see in a laboratory. Achtovaya Torah, how does the Torah work? The Torah works in the following way. Tovaya Torah benifloiz v'shanois haminhogim. How did the Torah introduce itself? Well, Hashem started by completely turning over nature. Hashem, in order to introduce the Torah, he came and made a major display of turning nature upside down. Right? Tore a parallel of nature with the ten makas, Kabbalah Satorah. In order to make it clear, Hashem worked backwards. To introduce to them all the concepts of the Torah, he worked backwards. First, he showed them a live demonstration that there is a wise, all-capable creator. Lastly, Sma Shechofetz Beishi Yachbois, who can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. That's how Hashem introduced his doctrine, by giving a live demonstration of that. Now, what he's going to say is that the Torah works backwards. After Hashem introduced himself, he tells you, now here's, I'm telling you the story of what I did. I created the world X amount of years ago. So after you saw clearly who Hashem is, now he comes and tells us, this is the story of the world, we can accept it. Now, you're saying, but what about all the philosophical studies that have proven otherwise, that have proven that the world always existed? In and of itself, that question, the dilemma of, this was what they were struggling with in those days, was the world created at some point? Did it come into existence? Or was it always? He says this is a very deep philosophical question. And the arguments for and against each position are basically equal. It's not really a resolvable question. It's a very, very tough question that Aristotle went all out trying to resolve and ended up reaching a certain dead end in which there's so many arguments for and against each. Or even more than that, as he said soon, both possibilities are very difficult to comprehend. Meaning, the most logical thing would be to say, neither is true and there is no world. Just, there is a world. So one of the two has to be true. But both seem equally impossible. Until what happened? How did he tip the scales? So he tipped the scales based on his, you see, so he tipped the scale. We have this question, this dilemma. Two very difficult to understand possibilities. Always was, always created. So Aristotle used his means of reaching his conclusion, but the Torah tips the scale, tells us, here, I'm going to give you a tradition of what happened. HaKabbalah me'odom v'admach u'moshe b'nevuah. He says, yes, it's a tough philosophical question, but we have a tradition. L'maisa, it was already handed down by tradition from Adam to Nayach to Moshe through prophecy. And Moshe gave it to us through prophecy, through the Torah. Shehime ein sapik yesa ne'emenis ben akasha. That is certainly more reliable than any philosophical speculation. Now, so in other words, what he's saying is, they pulled one over you. This is what we started discussing last week. You were taught to understand, because this is how they taught it in the schools. You were taught to understand that it's been proven that the world always was. But that's not true. It was never proven. That was Aristotle's conclusion based on weighing one against the other and determining the lesser of two evils. Meaning, he had two very difficult possibilities. He determined that the less of the two evils is to believe that the world always was. Now, and this is what's so relevant in our days also. Once Aristotle reached this conclusion and set it down, that became current scientific belief. Once that became current scientific belief, the next step was, it's taught as fact. And that's why the Chovet tells the Kuzari, you up till now believed that this was fact. Why? Because that's what was taught. Why? Because that's what the big scientists believe. So, currently that's fact. Until when? Until later scientists decide otherwise. But for the time being, if this is the conclusion the scientists reach, this is taught as fact. Now, this is something that we really must note, because this is one of the most fundamental points in understanding our whole approach. How do we contend with the fact that scientists today have proven as a fact that the world is a billion years old, or 14 billion, right? What's that? 15 or 16 billion years old. It's old, whatever the case is. And in a big way, this is the answer. We're going to see him get even more into it. But you have to know, is everything that's really taught as fact, fact? The hashkafa in scientific circles always was. Current scientific belief is fact and can be confidently taught as fact. And Aristotle's philosophy was taught as fact for about 2,000 years. until it was finally overturned. So you have to, when you're approaching these scientific issues, you have to view it not just, like we said, people tend to just prostrate themselves. Oh, the scientists said, we bow in our faces and we start adjusting the tire. You have to step back for a minute. Get a broader historical perspective. Note that science has always been developing and changing. Right? And again, go 1,000 years back, anybody who would question the Aristotle philosophy would be viewed as a fanatic nut. Irrational.
One mentioned that principle that he was lays down that the Torah would never contradict an apparent scientific.
Wait, one thing at a time. So you're asking what about the things that are proven today?
Spontaneous generation.
What's that? Wait. Spontaneous generation is not in the Torah. Wait. Right now we're talking about the fundamentals of Torah. Well, we'll get to that. That's a separate discussion. What do we do with Chazal's construals of science? And that's not the discussion here. The discussion here is the Torah's account of the creation of the world. Okay? We'll see. Maybe we'll touch on that. But that's not what he's talking about. He's not referring to that. We don't know what his take would be on that. How do we view Chazal's scientific assertions? But that's a separate discussion. So, okay, so therefore, yeah, you have to view it in a broader historic perspective and say, yes, everybody at the time was completely wowed by whatever the current beliefs in the bigger world were. Address that backbone. You have to be able to say, yes, it's as intimidating today to stand against the scientific community and say, who said? And as someone told me, you have to be idiotic to say that in our times. You have to say that. The Jew is always idiotic. The Jew is idiotic enough to doubt Aristotle's philosophy, which everybody knew was fact. And the Jew is idiotic enough to doubt all the truth of all the pagan claims, which everybody knew was fact. The Jew is idiotic enough to stand throughout the generations and dispute what's commonly known as fact. So that's question number one. Again, we're not talking about sticking your head in the sand. But before we just buy it all, you have to go back and analyze. Is it really fact? Or is it something that's being taught as fact because that's what they believe right now? That's how it always has been. Until the facts change. It was a fact about 100 years ago that tonsils weren't necessary. And then the facts changed. And millions of people around the United States lost their tonsils on the premise that it wasn't necessary. Which was true then. You did. Which was true then. You also did. Victims of scientific fact. And then the facts changed. So, give it time. How much time should I give it? They've already believed in the dating system for, what is it, almost 100 years. How long did Aristotle's philosophies hold sway? Until they were dropped.
Who dropped them? When were they dropped?
It was in stages. Newton, among others. Okay. So, that's number one. Now, as far as the question of, well, is the means through which they prove the age of the world, is that really, maybe it is something that can be proven in a laboratory? So, as we'll see soon, the Jew has to take the approach, anybody who's been through enough Talmudic research has to say, the fact that there's an assertion doesn't yet mean for me that it's proven. With any halakhic ruling, what is a proficient Pesach say, let me analyze the data myself. I'm not going to buy it, let me analyze the data myself. You can always poke holes in things. A lot of scientific conclusions, I'm not talking about necessarily on issues of faith, a lot of things are issues of great human intellects at work reaching conclusions. But might be based on premises, you have to go analyze it. Maybe there are holes, maybe it's not absolute, maybe it's like he said about Aristotle, that it makes the most sense for lack of any other means of determining. So the truth is, I don't know the subject well enough. I do know that people who have analyzed it have found holes. Rabbi Gottlieb, for example, right, has shiurim in which he pokes holes in the way the system works. Why do we need to be so quick to just say, well, all of scientists say it, so let's go now and start readjusting the Torah? We don't buy things so fast. Show me that it's incontrovertible. It's probably not. And now, he's going to say something that's going to make most of us fall off our seats. Now, what happens if it would be proven? This is probably what's in the back of everybody's mind. What will happen if it does turn out, and I'm talking in terms of our struggles today, that the dating system is airtight, foolproof? Now, by the way, I'm just going to stick it again in parentheses. My client spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. I must say, perfectly honestly, I didn't understand a lot of the things. But I'll just say in a general way that, again, it really can't be proven unless you have a videotape from 14 billion years ago, because the most basic argument is that the world was created as an old world because it had to be. Meaning, even if you can show there's an absolute way of testing age, you test this rock and it shows 10 billion years, that still does not conflict with the Torah's conclusion. Let's note that that hasn't yet been proven in a laboratory that the rock is 10 billion years old. It proves in a laboratory that this rock has signs of age that are of 10 billion years. But you haven't shown, nobody's gone back 10 billion years. That would be a way of proving it. Going back in a time machine and seeing. Because once you have to say anyways that the world was created old, then fine. Sure, things are going to show signs of many more years. Most simple example. If someone was going to test Adam HaRishon on the day he was created, check his, I don't know what you would check to determine age, he would find that the world was actually 30 years earlier. He was created as a grown man, which means he was created as a man who had 30 years behind him. That's how he was created. And Benedict Miller points out, vultures came into being on what, the fifth day, right? What they eat? What do vultures eat? Carcasses. The world was created with carcasses. Okay? There are all kinds of different things that depend on decay, which means that there were decayed things that were created. Or even more than that. How long does it take for the stars, many, many stars, it takes many, many light years for their light to reach Earth. On the first day, the light was already reaching Earth, which means that the stars were created with who knows how many light years behind them. Okay. But whatever it is, let's get to the Kuzari's punchline here. Let's say it will be proven. It will be proven. It turns out that the world is a billion years old. So listen what he says about his discussion about the world being infinite old. Now, im haya mitztarich bal Torah lehamin ulahoyis. He says now, the truth is, I think we mentioned this the other week, that there were two schools of thought in understanding that the world was infinite old. It was Aristotle who said that the world as we see it with all of its systems always was. Now that conflicts with the Torah in an a way that can't be reconciled. What?
A reconcilable
way. You have to suffice with my ninth grade high school education. So, don't quote me on that because I'm also an editor, an English editor. But that can't be reconciled with the Torah. Because the Torah says that Hashem created the world. And also, part of Aristotle's point is that Hashem is not someone who, all of his dealings with the world are not in a conscious way. We saw that expressed earlier. Something that kind of just automatically emanates from him. Which means that there's no reason for it to have happened at any particular point in time. There's no way of justifying that it happened at this point and not earlier. And therefore it has to have been for as long as Hashem was, which always was. And there was no active conscious involvement in creating the world. It happened automatically. It emanates from Hashem. So that conflicts with the Torah on many counts, and there's no way of reconciling that. But there's a different version that preceded Aristotle, that was Plato's version, that he said that, no, the world as we know it was not always. What there was always was, we'll call it chemicals. There was something called Heuli, this chemical substance, that really was the most basic element of everything that exists, and everything developed from that. Maybe this was a more primitive version of the Big Bang. So listen to what the Kuzari says. You know what? If we were to have to concede that all evidence shows that there always was existence, we can live with that. He says, אם היה מצטרך בלתרה להאמינו להוידס ביולי בחיימר קדמי. If we would have to concede that yes, there's this Yuli, it always was.
What does Yuli mean?
What's that? It's a Greek term for the substance they believed in that is the most basic element of all matter. Now Plato believed that while the world itself came into existence at some point along the way, this matter always existed. It's a more modified version of Aristotle's understanding of how things always exist. So the world was created.
It's a Latin word.
I think it's Greek.
It's called
Heli. Heli. Maybe it's the progenitor of helium. I don't know. But that's a guess. Maybe. I don't know.
Rambam describes it as earth, air, fire, and water are made out of helium.
Rambam.
It's like it's helium because it's the Rambam.
Right.
He describes it as being waiting out.
Very fine substance, right? Something that the most basic elements are formed from that. Adam, the chris. So he says, primordial essence. He says we wouldn't have a problem believing that stuff always existed. And if that would mean that probably there were other worlds also before us, because they probably also developed from it, you know what? He could live with that too. Now this is very strange to our ears. But that wouldn't conflict with our faith. Meaning, it's certainly not described in the Torah, but all the Torah requires us to believe is that the heavens and earth that we know were created at that point. Now, is it possible that there was this other substance that always existed? Is it possible that there were other worlds before ours? Probably not. But you'll prove to me that, yeah? Fine. Doesn't conflict with our beliefs. Because at the end of the day, what the Torah dictates, we believe. This world, the world we live in, is new, created, mizman yadua, from that time that the Torah describes. All we need to believe in is that the world was created as described in the Torah, and that man originated as described in the Torah, and you want to tell me that there were other things that were before that, etc., etc. I'll grant you that. Now let's note what he's saying. He's talking theoretically. He doesn't mean to say that we actually believe in this. The Rambam has a longer discussion on this in Ma'ariv Nevuchim. What he's saying is, you know what? Our natural understanding is what the Torah says is meant to be taken literally. That's when all existence began. But you know what? I'm giving room to prove to me that, you want to prove to me that the world always existed? That not. That conflicts with our Torah that we can never accept. And that there will never be proof of. Because the Torah wouldn't conflict with something that can be proven in a laboratory. But there are modified versions of this infinite business that we could live with. Now, in other words, what he's saying is, we don't believe in all this stuff. But I'm leaving room for someone to prove it to me, and then I will adjust my beliefs. It won't conflict with the fundamentals. Now, why is this important? What? This is the sage, the Jewish sage. Now, why is this important for us to stress? Because here we're getting into the, I keep applying this to our discussion. People have already figured out, we already have our back exit. Should it be proven that the world really is a billion years old? Or should it turn out that the system is accurate? We can say the same thing. There are ways of working that out with the Torah too. The truth is, there were authorities who did that. They were thrown by the advent of evolution and of the dating system, and therefore they said, well, maybe the Torah's 6 days are not literal, etc., etc. Now, I want to say something. This is basically the way the Rambam puts it down in Ma'ariv Nevuchim regarding this theory. You need more than just the fact that it's scientific theory today to just come and say that. Meaning, at the end of the day, if a person feels the need to, well, if this is what the scientists say, then let's quickly say that it doesn't mean literal. You see, people have this desperate need to say, well, the 6 days don't have to be literal. One minute. Not so fast. If we will be hit in the face with clear evidence, we'll be able to say that. And the truth is even more than that. There were early Kabbalistic sources, Rabbi Yitzchak of Akko, for example, who made his own cheshbon. He was way before Darwin. He made his own Kabbalistic cheshbon of how old the world ought to be and came up with some astronomical figure. So, this is a person who through his own study of the Torah, through Torah methods, came up with an interpretation of the Torah which renders the age of the world much earlier. Then that's a legitimate shita. It's not the general shita. The Ramban didn't hold that way. The Ramban says that the 6 days of creation were 24 hour days like ours. The Kuzari doesn't hold this way. But it's a legitimate shita that's certainly not a pikosis. If there's a machloikis about how to interpret a pasuk, and nobody's denying what the pasuk says, it's certainly not a pikosis, right? But the question is, if you're coming just purely from a terrorist standpoint and saying, oh, there are two approaches, that's interesting. Fine. And if you become a very, very great Kabbalist and just can't see things otherwise in Rabbi Yitzchak of Akko because it's so clear from the Kabbalistic sources, fine. But if you automatically tend to say, oh, it's a good thing we have the Rabbi Yitzchak of Akko because otherwise we'd be in big trouble, you're missing some of the backbone that a Jew needs to have. And therefore we do need to be able to say, 1 minute, we're not going so quickly to start reinterpreting things, and we're not going so quickly to say that, no, this is not literal and that's not literal. If the general consensus of the Rishonim were, and they were much better at construing psukim and interpreting Chazal's intent than we are, if their general approach was that it's literal, it remains literal for us until we'll mamish be hit in the face with proofs otherwise. Yeah, let me just finish 1 second. Now, so here we come back to what we said before. Let's demand some more serious substantiation before we just go so quickly to say, oh, did Dr. So-and-so say that? All right, let's sit down and organize the Torah. Set it up right.
When the Ramban goes out of his way to say that the 6 days are normal 6 days like we know them today, who is he arguing against?
Possibly this Rabbi Yitzchak. I don't know. But there his agenda is something else, if I remember correctly. His point there is to counter the understanding that the first day was an instant. He says his context there is there was some difficulty with that pasuk and some wanted to say that it happened very quickly. He said, then you're saying that the first day was actually less than 24 hours. But the truth is that all 6 days was with 24 hour days like we know them now. That's really what he's coming to counter.
He's saying from 2 through 6, it's a different question than 24 hours.
Yeah.
The first day, I don't think it was
less. Yeah. Okay.
Excuse me, it's not a stira. Is it back to this amazing thing that you said that Ben didn't know about, which is that it may have been created?
No, not a stira. That has to be in any case. Yeah.
Like the vultures.
Okay, so that's as far as that goes. So again, basically what we're doing here, the Kuzi is providing, he's obviously not addressing our questions, but we see that all the same arguments and the same approach was just as relevant when he was busy combating Aristotle's philosophy, which was the established fact of those days. Mamush, we can apply the same principles he's using to many of the issues that we're contending with now. Okay. Okay, Baruch is asking, wouldn't the Torah provide us with some means of contending? Like, wouldn't the Torah give us some key to the answer? That's what you're asking. So, we have to approach this question in two ways. First of all, what happens, theoretically, and again, I don't know the sugya, but what happens if the whole cheshvan of the dating system really is flawed? Is your question a question? Let's say there's some serious flaw in it that they all missed. Is your question a question? No. So first we have to go and say, we don't know what holes there are. According to Rabbi Gottlieb, there are serious holes. So if so, the Torah is saying, look, human intellect is limited. Human intellect will be drawing conclusions all throughout history. Many of them will be faulty. The Torah does not need, it's not the Torah's responsibility to go and show the answer to every faulty conclusion a very wise human man is going to reach all throughout history. This is a mistake that people might be making for a period of 100 years. There are other mistakes that carried for longer than that. So not necessarily. Now, if it's more than that, if it's more substantiable than that, then even then we would say yes and no. The Torah does not always cover all possibilities to go off. In fact, on the contrary, when the Torah has an agenda to present things a certain way for its purposes, the Torah will ignore or simply gloss over the fact that people can go off. It's a principle in Torah. It's not just that it works that way, it's a principle. We see this already in Parshas Bereishis. Rashi there says, Hashem says, let us make man in our image. Rashi says, this is a great pasuk for Apikarsin. Plural, we're going to make man in our image, right? Hashem's purpose in that pasuk was, there's a message for those who want to grow. They can learn humility from Hashem. It's also going to mislead others. People who want to be misled are welcome to be misled. The Torah will not make a point of shutting off the door to error. Of shutting the door to error. In fact, the Torah will open doors to error. It won't push you out of those doors, but anybody who wants is invited out.
Is that principle such that we who do believe get more star? Is that the purpose of the principle?
Is that too, but the truth is that at the end of the day, the Torah can stand for itself. The Torah always had. Like the Kuzari says, the Torah does take the responsibility, like we said before, it will never conflict with something that can be clearly proven. There always will be, on the contrary. Let's say, while I'm speaking here, someone is going to come and show me that yes, that video that we've been talking about was discovered. The video that says 15 billion BC. Right? So what will my answer be? You're right. The Torah gave the indications that nobody other than Rabbi Yitzchak of Akko picked up on. And that's where the Torah answered your question. But it's a question, it's never going to be clear cut. All of these issues, just like many other areas of Torah, are issues that require a lot of study and analysis. Okay. Now, Omar HaKuzari. So in other words, bottom line is that the sage is dismissing the argument of what do we do with the philosophers by saying, as he said, you know what? I have nothing against the philosophers. They did an admirable job. But at the end of the day, it's human intellect. Human intellect is going to be limited. And therefore, the factor of divine tradition will always tip the scales. Okay. Omar HaKuzari. Okay, I accept. These are good, solid arguments. At this point in our discussion. Now, and if we will continue to converse, I see that they will still for a long time, I'll make you provide some more arguments. But I want to move on to another part of this discussion. Let's go back. This whole sefer is about tangents, right? That was how the early philosophical style was. So let's go back to our original subject. Again, one of the things that the king of Khuzar found most astounding is the notion that God would associate, relate, communicate with human beings. This was one of the greatest philosophical problems, and on the contrary, we're not bothered by it because we're so used to the idea. That's one reason. Another reason is because we don't really appreciate who Hashem is. But when a person like Aristotle really analyzed what the significance of a God means, he reached the conclusion that it's impossible to entertain the thought that he would interact, associate with people. So he says, but this, by you, Kuzari says, is a fundamental of your faith. How did you reach this conclusion? That the creator of all bodies, of all spirits, Banefashis, and of all souls, Vaschalim, and all intellects, Vamalochim, and of all the angels, Ashanis Alo Viskadesh Misgadel, who is so way up high and so great and so sanctified. He defines all intellectual comprehension, and he certainly cannot be sensed in any way. How is it possible that this great God, that he would associate, that he would connect to this lowly, mortal, physical being, the world, Bechamra, in its lowly material state, as amazing as it is, meaning Earth is a pretty amazing phenomenon, yet at the same time it's physical. And when we're talking in terms of a God, physical is the most remote thing possible. Now he says, now I do concede that it's pretty amazing. Ki bakaton shebaramasim mipliyas chokhmasim asheen adas masegesayisim. I agree that Earth is amazing. Earth is so amazing that the smallest of insects is a mind-boggling contrivance of wisdom. But as amazing as Earth is, it's physical, which is coarse, which is so far removed from anything we can imagine about God that we can't imagine we would possibly relate to it.
This problem, why is this difficult to understand? Hashem interacting with this physical world, he created a physical world, so obviously he has no problem interacting with it because it was his own creation. Okay,
the philosophers had the same problem with that, and therefore they believed that he actually did not consciously create the world because of this very problem. They believed that the world was not a conscious product of Hashem's decision, but rather it developed by force of Hashem's presence. Meaning, as we saw earlier, things emanated from him on a lesser level than he was, and things emanated from those things, and things emanated from those things, until ultimately we had the world emanating from higher forms of existence.
It was not a conscious decision that what rule, what physical rule caused this to manifest. In other words,
what made it work out so perfectly?
I'm going really off topic here. But everything either happens by there being some predefined rule dictating behavior, or a conscious choice. So either Hashem consciously chose to emanate this physical world, or there is some rule that dictates how Hashem functions.
Yes. Yes, they understood that there's a rule that dictates how Hashem functions.
And
what they actually understood is true, meaning that this world is actually the result of a higher spiritual being that basically reflects the world just on a higher spiritual level, and kind of gave way to the creation of this world. And that higher spiritual being emanates from something more spiritual, which emanates from something more spiritual, which ultimately emanates from Hashem. Somehow or the other, there is this rule, law of whatever you'll call it, spirituality, nature, that these things emanate. It'll always develop into a lower level of what itself is. Now, we understand that that happened by conscious decision. They say, well, it didn't. How did it happen? This is kind of similar to the question of, this is mamish paralleling what we deal with. Where did the first form of life begin? Every form of life developed from the one before it. And this is part of what the Jewish sage was saying before, that both possibilities are very difficult to comprehend. But the concept of Hashem creating a world was even more difficult. Rav Shach gave a mashal for this, right? That's what they say. In quotation marks. We know that all forms of life developed from more primitive forms of life, which ultimately developed from some cell of slime in a marsh that 15 billion years ago, right? That's how it all started. The big mystery is, how did that first cell develop that caused the whole reproduction process? That's the one part of the picture we don't know. But other than that, we have it all clear. Rav Shach said a mashal with this. He said, you know what that's like? people came from the shtetl to the big city. And they heard, they didn't believe it, they were cultured people, they didn't go for fairy tales. But they heard that there's this massive wagon that travels without horses. And they call it a locomotive. Now they knew that there couldn't be such a thing, they weren't going to be taken over by these sorts of legends. But a couple of people from the shtetl actually came to the big city, and lo and behold, there was such a thing. A huge locomotive that travels without horses. So they sent some of the best minds of the shtetl to figure out how this works. And the best minds of the shtetl came back and they said, there's really nothing to it. We figured out what the secret is. The car that we saw, it doesn't move by itself. There's a car in front of it that pulls it. So what's the chachma? There's nothing to it. Now, that car in front of it moves because it's a car in front of that one that moves it. That one moves because it's a car in front of that one that moves it. Now, there's only one thing we haven't figured out. We have the whole thing, 99% of the picture is clear. We just don't know how the front car moves. But other than that, we have it all clear. So that's basically the question that you're asking. And that's basically the question that the scientists are asking. We know that it all developed from previous, more primitive forms of life. The only thing we haven't yet figured out is how the first one developed. Okay, fine. But 99% of the picture is clear. All right. Same as these chevra with their locomotive. And now, Omar HaKhover. So now the sage responds and he says, Bidvar chozeh lo yitzrachti bidvarim rabim lav shivcha. He'll move on. The sage is going to say now what I thought you were asking. He says, you know what? The way you just presented it now, you answered the question for me. I don't need to work too hard to answer you. How did the king of Kuzar present this question? He said, as amazing and as astounding as this world, Earth, is, it's still too physical for God to relate to it. He said, and I acknowledge, even the tiniest ant is so astounding. So he says, well, one minute, you just said that the tiniest ant is so astounding. How did that ant become so intricate? Hashem is too great to associate with anything physical. He doesn't deal with anything physical. Wouldn't create anything physical. How did that amazingly intricate ant develop? Was it a star that created it? Elizulasa or something else? If there's something that's so amazingly planned, who planned it? It could have only been a creator. When you look around the world and you see how everything is so perfect, it has to have been planned. It must have been a creator. Omar Kuzari. So the Kuzari says, no. That's not a question. We know how all these things were created. That's nature at work. Here the Kuzari is setting himself up. We've already started describing it. The natural workings of the world is not a kasha. Natural workings of the world is Mother Nature. She's really nice and she set things up well. The Chover says, oh, it's all nature that set these things up. What's nature? So Amar Kuzari. So the Kuzari says, what do you mean, what's nature? You know what nature is. It's one of the most fundamental properties that we learn about in university. We don't know exactly what it is. Meaning, I can't define it for you exactly. I'm not that sophisticated. But it's one of the most fundamental properties of Earth. The scientists, the philosophers, they know exactly what it is. But it's something inherent. It's a certain property that the world has. Nature, it does these things. The Chover answers, they know what nature is exactly, how we know what nature is. You know what the definition of nature is? Listen to the philosophical, the scientific definition of nature. Goda oisa philosoph. Here is how the philosophers defined nature. It is the cause. It's the cause for Asher bayanuach v'yanua hadavar asher hubay be'etzem v'loy b'nikra. It's the cause of anything that's inherent about the creation. Meaning, we'll just put this in a very broad way. If I move my hand, that's not the workings of nature, because that's circumstantial. It's not inherent in me. If I grow, that's something that's inherent about me, right? That's the working of nature. There are some things that are not ascribed to nature. There are some things that happen because they happen. They're happenings. But those things that are not happenings, those things that are inherently a part of the item, the development of those things is ascribed to nature. That's the definition of nature. Nature is the things that causes or initiates all of those processes that are not by chance. That's what nature is. Okay? That's the definition of nature. Now, what does that mean exactly? What that means is, there are things that happen by chance, and things that happen that don't happen by chance. There are things that's how it works. Anything that's how it works, not by chance, that's nature, that's the scientific definition, and now we understand how it all works.
By chance or by some means other than a conscious decision?
Well, a conscious decision and chance were classing together for these purposes. Meaning, when you grow, it's not a conscious decision and it's not chance.
It's not a chance. It's not chance.
Right.
That way, I didn't, wasn't.
All your decisions are also chance in this sense. Meaning, it's something that could or could not have happened. It didn't have to happen. Those things that could happen, could not happen, are not nature. Those things that must happen are nature. That's the definition of nature. What's that? Turning the wheel is not nature. Exactly. A car turning right is not nature. The sounds that you hear when you turn the ignition is nature. And now we understand how it all works. So, Omar Kuzari, 1 minute. That's the whole philosophical definition of nature. You explained to me what it is, but you still haven't told me how it works. Kiilu oimer ki adavar shianua me'atzmei v'yanuach me'atzmei. In other words, what he's saying is that when something moves automatically, let's say the sun, as opposed to an animal, when an animal moves, it's not nature. It's chance or decision. When the sun moves, that's nature. You're saying, when something moves or doesn't move by itself, yesh lo siba. So there's a cause for it. Now, siba ma baya nuach via nuach. There's a cause. When something is not by chance, then there's a cause that makes it move. Any development in this world that's not by chance is due to a cause. Right? Are you following me? And vasiba hi yateva. Let's put this into very simple terms. What we're saying is like this. If I jump up and down, that is not inherent in who I am. Right? So that's not nature. If I grow, that is nature. So therefore, whenever something does something, whenever there's a development, that is not by chance, it happens because of a certain cause. There's a certain cause causing all those things that are the regular workings of the world. And that's nature. And now we understand what nature is. In other words, what the Kuzari is saying is, they've pinpointed nature, but they have not explained it. Said, anything that's not something you decided to do, anything that's not a freak occurrence, but anything that is part of the regular workings of the world, is nature. And now we understand how the world works. It runs by nature. In other words, we've said nothing. Right? This is mamish the mashal that we gave when we mamish began. The way my Rebbe put it. The scientific explanation of how the cordless phone works. Remember that? Everyone remembers. No? How does the cordless phone work? A woman asked her husband. So he said, I'll explain to you how the cordless phone works. But first we have to understand how the phone with the cord works, right? We can proceed from that to understand the cordless. How does the phone with the cord work? Well, there's a law of nature. You ever notice that if you pull a dog's tail here, it barks over there? So you see that you pull here, it barks there. That's the concept of the cordless phone. Now you understand that? What? The cord pull phone. Yeah, the cord phone with the cord. So now, you understand that there's such a law? A cordless phone is really the same thing, same principle. It's just without the dog in between. It's a variation of the same principle. Just without the dog in between. You can pull the tail and it barks over there without a dog in between. But it's really all the same principle at work. That's what he's basically described here. That's what we call nature. It's all the same principle at work. What is it? Well, we don't know exactly. Right?
So, you just said that nature has always been there, always will be there, and therefore it's something that's a constant, which is basically a
person. Exactly, that's what we're getting to. So he's saying, you know what you really did? This is really the point that he's leading to. You gave all kinds of fancy definitions, convoluted, complicated definitions that I just made you crazy about for the last 15 minutes. And really, what it boils down to is, what makes everything that happens inherently happen, which is Hashem. So nature is a Greek substitute for the word Hashem. That's what he's getting at. So Amar Achava, Zeu Sherotzoloima in Daikus Rav Bediktuk Vehefesh. Now you understand all the convoluted things I was just saying. This is exactly all the philosophers are saying, just they're saying it with an awful lot of pilpul and convolutions and sophisticated studies of what does fit that category and what doesn't fit that category. So it gets so convoluted and so complicated and so impressive that you lose sight of what the basic definition of nature is, and that is, however the world works by itself. That's the definition of nature. The workings of the world. And you still haven't explained it. You just defined exactly what we relegate to this category. But what it is, you stay with the same question mark unless we insert the word Hashem, which we'll do next week. Bezos Hashem. Exactly.